We'll call the House Tax Committee back to order. And again, today, members, we're fortunate to have a discussion with Commissioner France of the Department of Revenue. So I think what we'll do is we'll go through the various sections that you have here. We'll let you make your presentation, and then maybe we can split in between them and see if there's any member questions at all. Commissioner France, please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Myron France, a Revenue Department Commissioner on behalf of the state of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to be here.
Welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you all. I appreciate the opportunity to discuss issues of hopefully of interest to you. And what I'm going to do is go through this list here that you see now in front of you of four different areas. But what I'd like to encourage, obviously, to the extent I don't hit areas or issues that you find questions about, we can always come back, and I'm glad to give you more information. We'd like to make a more regular opportunity to provide you with information about the department and what's going on.
And Commissioner, I believe these are in order of importance.
Mr. Chair, you're always correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, tax reciprocity update. One of the things that we wanted to report onto this committee is a kind of a tax reciprocity overview. For some of those on the committee who may not have been aware, tax reciprocity is really sort of a Midwest phenomenon. It's not done in certain parts of the country. And I think part of the issue, obviously, is we have a lot of states that have large cities on the borders that have this large crossover. But income tax reciprocity is a formal legal arrangement between two different states or three different states, whatever it might be. And it allows residents who live in one state and work in another to file returns and pay taxes on income in only the state of residence. So for all those people that work and earn income in one state, they have to typically pay the tax in the state that they earn the income in. They also have to pay tax in their state of residence on any income they earn in that state. And they get credit for taxes paid in another state. But obviously, the burden is on these taxpayers to have to file in two different states. Well, as you all know, the history of tax income tax reciprocity with Wisconsin, that began in 1968, been around for a number of years. There have been a number of governors who've had concerns with it, going back to Governor Anderson, Governor Ventura, and most recently Governor Polenyi terminated the income reciprocity agreement in 2009 was the last year. So 2010 and now 2011 are both tax years in which there is no income tax reciprocity with Wisconsin. One of the challenges in entering into an agreement with the state is defining the net revenue loss and the ability to make reimbursement payments, because there's typically in a state situation, there's one state that loses revenue and another state gains revenue in these situations. The best situation, obviously, are those situations where, or I should say the easiest situations, or where there's pretty much a net zero, that you have the same amount of people working in one state living in the other. But that's not the case in Minnesota and Wisconsin. We have anywhere from 50 to 60,000 Wisconsin residents who work in Minnesota, and only 13, 15, or 17,000 Minnesotans who live in Minnesota and who work in Wisconsin. So we have a mismatch in that regard. So right now, the Department of Revenue is working with Wisconsin's Department of Revenue to complete an income tax reciprocity benchmark study. And this study is designed to estimate the magnitude of the payments that would be required in any reciprocity agreement. This was part of the law that was passed last year. And I've recently spoken with the Secretary of Revenue in Wisconsin, Secretary Chandler, and they've committed to fully participating in the study. Now, the reason the study is so important is that we haven't done one really since 1995, and there have been a lot of population changes, as we all know, and there have also been some issues about income tax rates and the amount of tax that would be paid in the different states of residence. So for the 2011 income tax forms, last fall, both Minnesota and Wisconsin modified the tax returns to include some questions about reciprocity income to assist both Wisconsin and Minnesota in capturing and analyzing those returns in which there would be income reciprocity affected. So we've got the process set up where we will be scanning and collecting that information, excuse me, as it's reported this year, and also Wisconsin will be doing the same thing. So as we begin this process and the returns come in later this, they're starting to come in now, obviously, but later this year and through the and through 2011, we will be analyzing those returns. We'll be analyzing population studies, and the expected completion date is March 1, 2013. Before I go to the next topic, though, one of the concerns we have is, in order to implement a new income tax agreement, a reciprocity agreement, you really have to do it before the tax year begins. As this committee knows quite well, there are those occasions where this committee can make changes in the law that can occur during the tax year that can be effective for the beginning of that tax year. But in this particular case, because of the change in withholding that would be required by the different employers in Wisconsin and Minnesota, both states really need to have the implementation of this new agreement set up prior to prior to 2012 or 2013 beginning. So that's the challenge. Is I know there are folks who would like to move this forward even quicker. The difficulty is coming to an agreement, getting it in place before the next tax year. So I'm going to move on to some internal department issues, but any questions on the Wisconsin reciprocity before I move on?
Members, any questions? Does it really affect anybody, Commissioner, except me?
A few. Yeah, there are a few. Yeah, there are a few. Yeah, there are a few around. I mean, it's
some
it's
metro
interesting.
Folks.
Yeah. No, I was going to have a question.
Representative Carlson.
When you're you referenced the negotiations, and of course this committee is concerned with the tax reciprocity agreements, but there are other reciprocity agreements, and while you're negotiating tax issues, does Wisconsin or does Minnesota for that matter ever put any of those other issues on the table?
Commissioner.
You know, there's higher ed reciprocity and just to name at least one other.
Commissioner.
Chair, Representative. At this point, we've only been focusing, the Secretary of Revenue in Wisconsin and I have only been focusing on the income tax reciprocity agreement. That's all that's on our plate right now.
Representative Carlson?
Yeah, well, I was just curious, Mr. Chairman, because there are other reciprocity agreements, and sometimes one state or the other at a given point in time may perceive some of those other agreements to being to their advantage or disadvantage, depending on sometimes the year. So I'm just curious if they put that up, that other stuff on the table, and apparently you're focusing on taxes at this point. And I'm not sure historically if that happens or not.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Carlson. Yes, and the what we passed last year in the tax bill and the governor signed was income tax reciprocity with Wisconsin only, very specifically to that. To that point. And Commissioner, I believe we also have reciprocity with North Dakota, and the one that threw me off was Michigan, but I guess up in the Duluth area, some people sure. work in the UP, and UP folks work in, so, okay. Representative Brunbeck.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just curious, what are the difference in income tax rates then between Wisconsin, Minnesota, or North Dakota, Minnesota? I mean, I guess I haven't thought this through. Is that the idea is that they owe us, is that right? I'm not sure what the concept is, frankly.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, it is a complex question because there are so many different fact patterns. And typically, the Wisconsin rates are a little bit, they're close to the Minnesota rates, but they're not quite as generous as Minnesota with deductions and credits. So in many cases, income earners will actually pay more tax in Wisconsin. And so one of the things that we really have to do and have to study is we have to look at all the different scenarios in terms of those folks who end up paying more in Wisconsin or pay less in Wisconsin. It's easiest when obviously to calculate these reciprocity agreements when the rates are about the same, there's not a lot of difference. Really what you're doing is just a convenience factor in that situation. But with Wisconsin, that's one of the reasons we need to do the study, is to analyze these different fact patterns and just see where the income taxes paid change and where the income tax credit for taxes paid in another state change. So there are a lot of different fact patterns we have to look at.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Ron Beck.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Frenz, for your work on this issue. Okay, if you want to proceed, please.
I'd like to talk about the website redesign. This is the current website for the Department of Revenue, and we've had a lot of concerns. We've had a lot of complaints that it's not very intuitive, it's cluttered, it's got poor research function, information contacts, and the forms are hard to find. And so what we decided last year was to begin the process of looking at ways to make this more effective. There are a lot of wonderful trade-offs to the extent we can provide information to taxpayers that's easy to find and they can access 24/7. So what we've done is we've come up, this is the new design on the website that we have, and it's really got the four different buckets of categories for people, for individuals, for businesses, for tax professionals, and for local governments. And you might note on each one of those different categories, e-services information is the first line item on that particular category. One of the things that I'll talk about in just a minute is the expansion of e-services. But we're truly trying to do the best we can to make voluntary compliance, understandability, a critical component of the website and our services so that people can pay their taxes, they can pay them quickly, and they can get them correct. And we make sure that that happens. So you see that's sort of the design. Now, one of the things that we did with a new website, our goals were to try to make the navigation a lot more simple. We wanted some intuitive menu labels that made sense to people. We needed to update the content, obviously, on a regular basis. Plain language is really important. It doesn't really serve the public if we take complicated regulations and complicated notices and just put them on the website. What really is important is we say things, I'll give you an example in a minute, but we say things that are a little bit more obvious to folks. We wanted to enhance the search functionality. That was a big problem. And we just really wanted to update it so the folks would get a better look at it. So what we did in January, we launched a website, and I know that a lot of folks in the legislative offices, a lot of the employees looked at the website. They gave us some feedback. We tried to come up with some usability tests. We wanted to make sure that it worked for individuals, for businesses, for tax professionals, and local governments. So there were a lot of people that we really accessed to try to get them to go on the website, test it out, so that we could have it available. We'd like to launch it on May 1st in 2012. And then obviously once we launch it, it's not a matter of just launching it, but it's a matter of continually updating and making sure that it works effectively going forward. Here's an example of our plain language project, and we're trying to make sure that we convert government information a little bit more simple. I think what I like is the question before is, can I make payment arrangements on the amount I owe? And we changed that to, are payment of plans available? But the real answer is yes. I mean, you right away want to communicate to somebody what is the primary answer to this question, and the answer is yes, then you go on to explain how you do it. So this is just a minor example of how important it is for us to make sure that when people read this stuff, they get it and it makes sense. It's intuitive, and they can go on. The other thing that I want to mention as part of the departmental update that goes along with the website redesign, and that is our whole focus on supporting voluntary compliance. One of the things that we really want to make sure that we do, and this committee, for example, was instrumental 4 years ago, 4 years ago, in committing resources to the integrated tax system, GenTax, that we now have in the Minnesota Department of Revenue. Well, we appreciate that long, the vision of this committee, the legislature, and we've tried to take that information and turn it around and make it accessible and available to taxpayers. One of the things that we did this last year that I'm very proud of is that the department entered into a process to figure out how can we process all the checks that we get, the paper checks that we get, how can we process those checks on a much more fundamental or a fair basis, but quicker and cheaper. Well, instead of investing in a lot of equipment, we were able to redesign an entirely new project where we take these paper checks and we electronically process them. We were able to save over $1 million in avoiding buying new equipment, and we've also saved over $100,000 a year in reducing the processing time just to get these checks processed. You see the good-looking guy there in the picture standing next to the commissioners, the governor. So, it was really a great day, though, that he came over and he talked to people. And I think it's important that, to encourage folks in the department that, that we're really working hard to make things better. Another really important part of the revenue mission is e-filing. I'm sure you've all heard of folks who now e-file with the Department of Revenue or with the Internal Revenue Service. And you can see since calendar year 2002, there's just been a steady increase in the number of electronic filers. We now have 80% of the individual income tax returns are filed electronically. And we're only down to about 20% now on paper. The numbers are not quite so high in the business arena, but we're working on that. This is a great sign of folks being able to access our system, file the M1 returns. And one of the things that happens with the filing of an electronic return is that your refund, if you're entitled to a refund, can occur much, much quicker. I think one of the things that we're finding that is that the typical refund is made in under a week, and in some cases 3 days, if in fact everything is properly filed. Along with e-filing is the whole concept of e-services, and we've started this process specifically for business taxpayers. We will launch it in the future to other taxpayers, but we wanted to make sure that businesses, especially small businesses, could access the department on a 24/7 basis and update their file, make payments, get information, get copies of any information that had been sent to them as a business. And we wanted to make sure that was available all the time. We've also we started that process on October the 16th, and we've been working through that the last several months. We've had some issues, and people have given us ideas of how to improve it. But right now, business taxpayers can really access all their information online. They can also give access to their return preparers or their accountants or lawyers to access their department. So it really provides security, it provides 24/7, and it really helps the department get out information and reduce this lack of communication so that when one of the Department of Revenue employees sits down with the taxpayer, there's no longer this, well, I didn't get the letter, or I did get the letter, or this was not mailed. It's all there online, and people can access it, and they can move forward. Just one example of what's been happening with e-services. In 1 week alone, we got over 3,700 requests to view a letter that we had sent them. We had over 715 requests to edit their officer and contact information. And that's critical, because if you think about the return mail that the Department of Revenue gets because of a bad address or a bad name that comes back to the department, if we can get people to keep their account information up to date, it will drastically help us reduce that delay time. And like I said, we had over 1,800 requests just to change the address. And we had 327 requests in just 1 week to grant third-party access to another person. Once again, facilitating understanding and information to those folks. One of the really big projects that we accomplished last year was the electronic certificate of real estate value. And for those of you who work in the property tax area, you just know how important it is that particular area needs updating, it needs new services, and the certificate of real estate value is a required document in the sale of property in Minnesota. It's viewed both by the county and the Department of Revenue to look at a sale, to verify the terms of the sale. So on December the 1st, 2011, the new certificate of real estate value became available electronically. We now have 12 counties who have adopted the ECRV. We have 20 counties who are currently testing this system to see if it will work for them. We believe that reducing the paper cost of paper and the time-consuming nature of this for county staff will be helpful for them. And we believe once we get an integrated process throughout the state, it will make processing property tax information much more accessible for people around the state. Another update that I wanted to provide the committee was our process for tax analytics. As you know, we've been working on this since last year. These dates show that we've been getting questions and proposals from vendors. We had an evaluation team set up to look at some of these proposals. We've been doing the scoring, and in November, the Department of Administration entered into master contracts with a number of vendors, and I'll show you the list in just a moment. But that, by entering into that master contract, it gave us the opportunity now to deal directly with these vendors. So we're now in the process of dealing directly with the vendors, looking at their products to see what kinds of products they have that would be helpful. One of the things that we had to do, though, inside the Department of Revenue was to make sure that we understood exactly what we were buying, because if we were going to purchase a product from a vendor, we needed to make sure that the value of their product was improving what we were above and beyond what we were already doing as a department. So we had to make sure that we had good basic data on what we were collecting, how we were collecting that, and to make sure that the new product would actually enhance what we were doing. We've looked at other states to see what other states are doing. We've discussed a number of projects with vendors. Right now, this is not a limitation factor at all, but right now we're looking in three kind of conceptual areas that are of interest to the department. We're looking at return processing. We want to look and see if there are tools out there to help us. We process returns and select those returns that need to be reviewed before a refund is issued. We want to look at audit selection criteria and approaches to see if there are other ways that we can select audit candidates. We want to use analytics to make our current selection for audits more effective and more efficient going forward. And those are some of the areas. We're actually in the proof of concept phase now with several vendors, and then once that is completed, I'll be able to talk more publicly about where we are and what kind of products that we're looking to engage. These are the vendors who have been approved with a master contract to make proposals under the master contract for data analytics, for tax analytics. They've all been in contact with the Department of Revenue. They're all moving proposals forward, and we're looking at them. One of the last areas I want to hit in the department update is our tax compliance initiative. This is just recently through the last month. I think it's, I think this is through January. But it shows you the appropriation that we were given, that we've actually expended $1.15 million toward this appropriation. Our target revenue, obviously, is $82.3 million. So far, we've collected $12.35 million. And our overall expected return on investment is $6 for every $1 investment. The current rate of return for this last month is a little bit on the high side, but that's because money sort of comes in unevenly, and so we need to look at this more in a six-month or a half-a-year term to make sure we're on the right track. We felt like we got off to a little bit of a slow start, but we're trying to make sure that we allocate all those folks to the initiative to make sure that we can get into the process and make that kind of compliance initiative that we need in order to hit the target. The other operational updates that then I can open up for questions about the department are: we've improved Where's My Refund, very important component on the website, because people really, that's the number one question that we get is where's my refund. And so to the extent we can get people to access that website and find out, then it has them not calling us quite so much. The call volume is hard to manage, and so we're trying to increase that as best we can. We're trying to enhance the phone scripts. As we all know, it's frustrating when you call up an agency and you don't get a human first, and you get a bunch of choices to make. We're trying to make that as simple and as quick as we can. And like I say, we're trying to enhance the website process. The more we can get people on the website using those services, the less they call us. That gives us more time to deal with those folks who need to call. We've centralized the power of attorney process, which was really scattered throughout the department in a way that I think is much more effective. On the horizon for taxpayer services going forward, the final rollout of the integrated, we now have an integrated tax system in Minnesota as of February the 13th. And all the special taxes, the individual, the corporate taxes, all the tax areas now have a fully integrated tax system that provides wonderful opportunities, and we need to use that tax system to enhance services. So we're trying to extend e-services for businesses. We want to get more online registration. We want to try to extend e-services for special taxes, cigarette taxes, tobacco taxes, and other special taxes. We want to enhance these services for individuals as we move forward. We really want to do a quality review of our phone calls. I mean, I think it's critical, and I get, you know, information requests from some of you sometimes on behalf of constituents, people that have concerns or questions. We really have to make sure that we have the right kind of people answering the phone, giving them the right kind of information. We really want to enhance our filing and payment reminders. Now, it's not our job to tell people when their taxes are due or their forms are due, but on the other hand, with our integrated tax system, there really is an opportunity to, on an automatic basis, provide updates, to, especially to small businesses, about a filing requirement that they might have. And we really want to make sure that we can get more accurate information when an electronic payment is not made. That is a really inefficient process. So when someone tries to make an electronic payment and for some reason it gets rejected, it's really important that we get that information to the taxpayer right away to solve it, because otherwise we get involved in a long mail process, mail going back and forth. So there are a number of ways that if we can enhance and speed up the correction of problems and errors, we can really make the system, I think, work much more effectively for taxpayers. So before I get into the tax reform update, I'd like to open up for any questions about the departmental update.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Franz, and those are some good things that we're hearing about. I know serving on the committee, the Representative Pepin and the tax analytics, I heard a lot about that from her, and so it's kind of exciting to see this beginning to go into place. Question I have for you is, typically, a legislator passes legislation, and it goes on into that. Have you had ongoing discussions with Representative Pepin as an author and having a lot of knowledge as a legislator? I saw in here spending the next year listening and gathering input from legislators, but this is kind of one of those things where you're implementing something. And have you had discussions with Representative Pepin in regards to this analytics since the law was passed?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I personally have not. I know that Commissioner Cronk and the Department of Administration in working on the overall master contract had some discussions, but I'd be glad to follow up. I think that's a great suggestion to make sure that we're listening to those folks who really have put a lot of homework into that. Part of the problem, we were unable to really talk about a lot of the master contracts until they got publicized, until they got public and awarded, and now that we're in that phase, I think it's a great opportunity to listen to some more.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I think Commissioner Franz, that is, and but also in the process of contracting, prior to that, you have a statement of work where you actually define the questions to be answered. During that time, that is not contracting time, so then you are able, and I think especially inceptually, when you are getting that whole through, that's the time to be most certain that you are true to legislative intent. And so the greatest input and value from a legislator who has been deeply immersed in it by the time they author such a bill and go through all of that is that time. And I know we're past that, but I think even still, just a thought not only for today in regards to what you can do with that, that legislators can be a tremendous resource because they've worked so deeply in that area, to see that more as an ongoing effort rather than just a one-time event. But maybe in the future, even a little bit earlier in the process. But thanks for going ahead and having conversations at whatever stage it is right now. You can do that. Thank you, Commissioner.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Commissioner Franz. Thank you very much for being here before the committee today. I just had a question. If you could kind of refresh me on the tax compliance initiative, of what kind of activities are incorporated in that effort to step up compliance. I assume auditing is a big part of that, but are there other things going on? And one of the things that struck me in sort of your updating and working on your electronic files and the ease of that is, I mean, how much of that might be somebody who's in a payment program to bring their taxes up to date but maybe moved and you don't have their change of address. There's, you know, just sort of a catch-up process, if you will, of making sure that you're locating people who are supposed to be paying their taxes and making sure they're doing that.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a really good question. In fact, that's one of the challenges every time there's a new initiative in the department is how do you select those areas to employ new people or new tools in terms of the areas. Now, clearly, as you mentioned, one of the areas that we're looking at is audit selection and examination, but another one is collections. I mean, one of the things that you alluded to is that to the extent that we can enhance or put more emphasis on collecting those tax bills that are everyone agrees is due, the taxpayer agrees they owe a certain amount, and they're simply not paying it, that's an area where we are focusing on is collections to try to enhance the return so that our accounts receivable, if you will, comes down. So that's one area, but also we do look at really, and we've tried to allocate the resources across the department because we felt like virtually every area, every tax or every tax type and all the functions really had a component that if we added some more resources to, we could enhance that revenue. So we did try to look at the entire department, and there's very few that have not been have some resource allocation to.
Representative Bloom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just a quick follow-up on that. So on those efforts, is that all going on in-house, or are you using any outside contractors to help with some of that work?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, all the activity has been in-house, the Department of Revenue employees thus far.
Representative Bloom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, you indicated that it was important to have the right person on the phones. And what kind of training or continuing education do you have for the people that the public would interact with? And the reason I raised the question, it's been a few years now, but I had a personal experience where I had a tax question and dealing with my mother's estate, and talked to one person and got one answer, called back for some clarification and got a completely different answer talking to another person. So I went to a CPA and asked what their recommendation was. But, you know, for purposes of understanding and constituency or consistency with the staff, I'm just curious what kind of training there is so that when the general public does have a question, they get the right information, or at least not conflicting information.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, that's a good question and a real challenge. I mean, as you know, there have been studies done with the Internal Revenue Service about folks calling in and getting different answers to the same question, and the problem is the interpretation. And so we do have a lot of training involved. But one of the things that's really a challenge is you want to have people answering the phone that know a lot, that have good substantive knowledge about that particular tax type. And you also want them to be trained in how to respond to folks and help them with their questions. And one of the things that was going to help with our new e-services situation is that folks who call in will be able to be logged on, and the person in the Department of Revenue will be able to see the screen that they're actually looking at home, so which will enhance a lot to make sure that everyone's talking about the same thing. So that's one of the ways we're trying to improve that connection. But one of the things we do try to do is we have a lot of substantive tax training in every department and in every division and all the different tax types. And so the number one way to have good phone service and good substantive answers to questions is to make sure people understand the law and that they consistently give the same answer. And so that's we do a lot of training in that area. We also try to train folks so that they can help. Phone calls are a little bit different than just answering letters or answering, you know, responding in a written fashion. So that takes a little bit of training as well. But your points are really well taken, and we try to stress training substantively so our employees do give the same answer and hopefully the correct answer every time. But we do our best to make sure that happens.
And, Mr. Chairman, just another footnote. I just happened to recall, as the Commissioner was talking, I also happened to call Hennepin County on the same question and got yet a third interpretation.
Which one did you take?
I said I went to the CPA, or a CPA that it dealt with the transfer of real property as part of an estate, and how you've calculated the tax basis is what the issue was. And there were different scenarios that, well, two levels of government, but two, the main question was two different scenarios from the department itself.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Representative Downey?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Commissioner Friends, a couple of questions on your tax analytics process so far. You mentioned brainstorming sessions and convening a steering team, and I'm curious whether or not you are able to involve some outside folks. I'm thinking specifically of small businesses who tend to bear a very significant brunt to their operations when they have some kind of a sales tax audit done on them. Any feedback loops in that process for folks who are the recipients of your audits?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, you know, one of the things that we focused on initially and those teams that I was describing was to try to make sure that we've never really had to have a precise handle on what it is that we do and what effect that has on our audits and revenue generation. And so we were, to be honest with you, that in the first phase, we were mainly concerned with making sure that we'd establish the baseline in the Department of Revenue in terms of what we were doing, what activities we were engaged in, and what value could a vendor or product add to that beyond what we were doing. So it was really more initially a survey of what it is that we're doing, and then we went to the other states to look at what they had done in utilizing tax analytics. So it was admittedly more inward looking, kind of a technical look at what the department was doing. One of the things we're doing now, as we're getting to the when we get to the analyzing the products or that are being proposed to us in terms of going forward and doing a proof of concept, that is where we're really looking to get outside help in terms of, will this really work? What kind of burden will this put on a business, big business or a small business? So that's a phase that we're engaged in now. We will look to those kinds of people to give input to, because it's critical, as you said. It won't help us to develop new tools if, in fact, they don't get the information we really want from the businesses or they are unnecessarily cumbersome.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then the timeline that you have here, do you think the use of the analytics will actually come online in time for it to have an impact in this biennium, or is that overly optimistic?
Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I was afraid you were going to ask that. I think we're going to see some revenue. We have some projects now that we think, if the proof of concept really works and it goes the way we think it will, we think that we might be able to generate some revenue. The problem is, as you know, getting into this tax year and time's going by every month and we're losing more of an opportunity to use it for refund analysis, for example. But we're hopeful that in this biennium, certainly, we'll be able to see some revenues. I'm not able to predict how much right now, but we're doing our best to try to make that happen so that we see some real return in this biennium.
Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I'm curious, and if you are hesitant to disclose this publicly, I'm glad to just get the information from you offline, too. I know one of the things we envisioned at the beginning was that the tax analytics capabilities of outside parties or new software would actually allow you to look at patterns and interactions between other agencies and other systems, which might actually point you to truly, you know, fraudulent or rather large misunderstandings of tax obligations and things. Can you describe a little bit the kinds of interactions you're thinking about bringing in outside parties to explore, whether that's more within the existing realm of your own tax systems and your own tax data, or whether you're actually able to get out and do some of these other correlations that we had thought would be helpful?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do think it's a little premature at this. I would prefer not to discuss that because of the ongoing negotiations with the current vendors about the different products we're looking at. And so I think it would be a little bit premature on my part to really talk about that. I need a little bit more information.
Representative Downey. Representative Giffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Somewhat along the same line, Commissioner Franz, in the design of the analytics itself, I think one of the concerns that we dealt with around the committee hearing was the number of small businesses that over rather small issues, they were caught up in this kind of like a broad sweep, and versus the ones that we felt that are a little more subtle, they're a little more devious maybe sometimes, a little bit harder to track down. How do you have a process, or are you working on a process in place to try and avoid that? You have, like Representative Carlson, trying to do the right thing. Maybe 3-4 different ways of doing it, but he's trying to do the right thing. versus somebody who's not trying to do the right thing and is on purpose. I mean, those are the ones that, in general, analytics can be really helpful. So can you give a little more information on how you might be thinking of doing that?
Okay, just a second here. We should probably call the meeting to order. We have a quorum. I'll officially call the meeting to order. Representative Crawford moves the minutes of February 21st. Hold that thought. February 21st, 2012. Any additions or corrections? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We are now... That your whole testimony so far has been out of order. but that's the way it goes sometimes. I apologize for that, members and commissioner. To the Kiffmeyer question, commissioner.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Representative, that's a good question. And, you know, one of the, let me back up a little bit and give some background. It's interesting in terms of the folks who are trying to do the right thing. And let's talk about them momentarily because it is, I'm continually pleased by the effort of Department of Revenue employees and taxpayers to try to get the answer and get it right and get it filed. I mean, you know, by and large, you know, over 90% of our revenue is voluntary compliance. People do it on time, they do it correctly or as best they can, and that works really well. And we have an internal communication system in the Department of Revenue, and so people can, on that little internal site, they can list compliments they get from taxpayers to employees, and there's usually one or two every day. And so I look at that at the end of the day, and it's just amazing to me how many times a taxpayer will leave a note or write a note or send an email into the department saying thank you to a particular employee for taking the time to explain things with them or calling them back, giving them more information. So we do spend a lot of time trying to sort of get it right, and I think that's really critical, and that's a main part of what we have to do. But looking at those situations where there's something else going on, or there may be something else going on, that's the challenge. And one of the things that data analytics, we believe, can ultimately do is provide those checks. So the more data you can use sometimes for a company or a taxpayer to verify that they are in fact the person they are, they have in fact filed a license, and they have in fact been in business for 3 or 4 years. If you can verify that kind of data in different sources, and that's part of what data analytics is all about, is collecting data, using it to make sure that you're looking at the right person for the right reason, and there are issues or there are no issues there. And so data analytics in many ways, I think, is going to enhance the department's ability to go, yes, that person is who they say they are, all the data is correct, everything is the way they report it, and that makes sense, and then move on to the folks where there's some questions, there's some holes. So we do think that data analytics will help us find those questions. Then we can flip through those questions and find out if there's anything there.
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I apologize, Commissioner. I meant to ask you this when I was asking questions about the compliance initiative, and I forgot. So I'm coming back again to that topic. It's a fine line when it comes to compliance and auditing and that, and you want to make sure that you're doing the proper amount of auditing and finding taxes owed, but then we also, as legislators, and I'm sure you perhaps hear it as well, the department concerns from people that feel like they're being abused in the auditing process. So I'm wondering about sort of your efforts in bringing on new auditors and staffing, and obviously we've got a goal there for return on investment and what's to be brought in, but I mean, is there some incentive program or anything for those auditors, or are they in any way being compensated based upon audits or what they bring in?
Commissioner,
Mr. Chair, Representative, no, we do not, and make it a practice not to compensate people for sort of the value of their audits or brought in. We try to compensate them on their ability to process cases, do things efficiently and effectively. So we do not engage in that kind of compensation system.
So there's no bonus structure if you initiate more audits. There's no is there any of that included in their performance evaluation in terms of compensation if they if they do more audits, anything along those lines?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, well, we do have expectations that they'll engage in a certain amount of activity. So if they're an auditor, they're expected to audit so many cases. So we do have built-in expectations, and sometimes cases can be complex and take more time, and they can get adjustments for that. But so we do have expectations that everyone will carry their load in terms of an employee to make sure everyone is performing the same basic functions, but it's not determined on the amount of money that's generated for a particular examination or audit, for example.
Representative Bloom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I think it's a question for you, but maybe the Commissioner wants to weigh in on this whole analytics and compliance issue. When we were on the floor last year and this bill passed, I was a strong opponent, and in fact, at the time, the department had concerns, but you successfully got Dayton to sign this bill, so kudos to you, Mr. Chair. But if members will recall, when we were debating this whole tax analytics, I was talking about the exemption or the carve-out, the preference for the overseas, the ability for the department to go in and collect folks who should be paying their taxes who are overseas company. And if members will recall, the debate was about these schemes that are called, you know, things like the double Irish and the Dutch sandwich. And so there was this big discussion to bring you back to that, Mr. Chair, that... oh, no, that won't. There won't be a problem with that. And my understanding, Mr. Chair, is that you had committed to get this bill signed, that you would do everything you could to correct that problem. And is your intention then to, because this is where it's at. I mean, the department is not able to do the tax analytics and the compliance, as we talked about on the last floor, which is a big money item because of what happened on the House floor last year. Having it come over from the Senate. We were trying to get this bill to go back to taxes. It did not go back to taxes. We actually thought the governor would never sign it, and, you know, we're disappointed to see the governor, in fact, sign it. But I know there was a commitment made with you and the governor that that would get corrected this year. Do you intend to fix that?
Well, your premise is incorrect. The agreement was, in the governor's office, was that I would contact those and lend my support for the governor's position, which I did. Commissioner Franz then was to meet me in my office about 3 o'clock that afternoon or so that I could report to him that I had made those contacts. That was the only agreement. So what happened from there, in fact, I distinctly remember telling the governor, I said, I'm not going to write checks my body can't cash, and I can't promise you that it will get done. I can promise you that I agree with your position, and I will advocate for it, which I did. So there was some misunderstanding there on what the agreement was, and Commissioner Franz came over that afternoon, and I explained to him the contacts I had made, and that fulfilled my part of the agreement. But I would let the commissioner answer that. If there's some help that he would need, I'd certainly be very interested to talk to him about that, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the opportunity to talk about it. I think one of the things that it clearly is a limiting factor in terms of not being able to use contingent fee payments for vendors. It is a limiting factor on what we can do and contract with as a department. I think one of the things that maybe was misunderstood was the idea that the department was somehow going to go out and hire independent contractors to come in and do audits or, you know, contact companies. And that was never the intention of the department. We were always intending that Department of Revenue folks would contact taxpayers, do the audits, but if we had a product that was based upon a return on investment, if you will, of the product, that we could pay the contract based on that, but it would have to be only after the taxpayer was assessed the tax, they agreed to pay it, or they went to court, and the court decided that was the tax due. So there would never be any tax paid unless the taxpayer agreed or the court held that that was the tax due. So, you know, we would prefer to have the open-ended ability to develop those contracts and make the most sense and can provide us with the most flexibility.
Representative Lencheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for clarifying that. I mean, I wasn't in the room, obviously, with you and the governor, but, you know, we all get told what happens then.
There were some pretty fancy stories flying about
then. Of course. And I understand how that works, but I will say, Mr. Chair, I had the distinct impression from you directly on the floor at that very moment when we were up on the floor speaking, that you had every intention to fix that if it was a problem. And are you? Do you think you'll be authoring a bill on that this year? You are the tax chair, so you can put it in your omnibus tax bill.
Thank you, Representative Chesky. And the discussions with Commissioner Franz will continue on that if more needs to be done. But I, you know, very distinctly remember telling the governor, he said, you know, I agree with you on this position, and I can advocate for it, and this is what I'll do to advocate for it, but I can't promise it'll get done. And some people apparently didn't hear the last part of that and thought that I had agreed that this was going to be done, which was simply not the case. So it was a very interesting time, and Commissioner, you know, my door is always open to you, and your door has always been open to me, and I appreciate that. And so if this needs some further discussion, we'll have that discussion. Representative Chesky.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I really respect your integrity in that, and it's hard to work with all the parties there. I will just say it's a good reminder to all House members, you know, look out for the Senate. Mm-hmm. And that was my problem. That came from the Senate. Senator Ortman had that language go through, and it's always good to recall that even when you're all on the same side, the Senate is a different body. And I think that was a very unfortunate moment in the Minnesota legislature for tax policy, tax collection, and fairness, because now we have the department going after all kinds of people except for this group. We're not going to go after them. That's what happened. And that came through the Senate, and that is what effective lobbying does. That came from a lobbying community to convince somebody that somehow they shouldn't have to have this burden that everyone else has. And I really hope we will bipartisanly take that seriously, that when a bunch of lobbyists get together and convince somebody that they should get a special carve out, now we're left with this. And it's, I know it's a detailed small thing, but it's a big thing as far as how Minnesota is going to address this issue. So I appreciate you putting that on the record for us to understand what took place there, and I appreciate your integrity on that. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lenchesky. And as I said, Commissioner, we'll have further discussions on that. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Commissioner, last year when you were before our committee, there were several questions regarding sort of how you do the audits and comments to the effect that some of these were, you know, there was double teaming going on, there was sort of really efforts to squeeze blood out of a turnip, you know, maybe that the ROIs, the return on investment, wasn't there. And so I've heard some of those complaints myself secondhand, and just wondering if you've changed the method or the oversight on the audits, because it did seem as though it was a new phase, but maybe not a productive phase of the audit program, because if you're going after spending $5,000 to get $700 or something, you know, what's the point?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, you know, one of the concerns that I share with you, Representative, is trying to make sure that we audit and examine those people that make sense. And one of the things that we've been able to do with the new integrated tax system is to coordinate audits. I think something that's happened to some taxpayers is that a sales tax audit might occur in February, and then maybe a income tax audit might occur in June, and there might be another tax audit later that year. And so we've been able to sort of look at this from a taxpayer perspective and coordinate so that when there's going to be an examination done, is there any reason to do another tax type at the same time? So we've tried to minimize the Department of Revenue showing up every other month kind of a feeling, which I think is a concern for some taxpayers. So that's been one thing. The other area, though, is a difficult one because, you know, we have sometimes you don't know until you go look under the paperwork what's really there. And so the key is, how can we as a department effectively evaluate taxpayers and make sure that their tax payments are correct and not make it seem like we're, you know, trying to squeeze money where there's really none due. And unfortunately, sometimes those no-change audits or very small-change audits occur, but those actually, that information actually comes back, and it really does, it gets filtered into our analysis, but why was that taxpayer selected? Is there something we should have known about that those indicators that should have told us that there was nothing there, so to speak? So we've tried to use that data to sort of reanalyze, why did we make the decision in the first place? Can we make a better one the second time? But that's going to happen. Some problem is, as we continue to do initiative, you know, biennium after biennium, it's putting pressure, frankly, on the examination and audit process. And so I'm not going to shy away from the fact that I think that there's a point where we have to decide, how much do we want to really work on voluntary compliance, making sure taxpayers have all the information they need, make sure that we give them the right services, versus how much do we have to go out and audit to make sure everyone's paying their fair share. We always have to do the enforcement. We know that. But, these new direct compliance initiatives do put pressure on the system.
Mr. Chair and Commissioner, could you just comment on the double teaming, two auditors in a hearing? Because my understanding is, what are you trying to accomplish? Apparently the IRS rarely, if ever, uses two auditors in an audit.
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm not aware of those situations, and I'll look into it and get back to you. I know from my experience as a tax practitioner before the IRS, I never went into a room with less than three or four IRS folks on the other side, and I always felt the odds were kind of even under those circumstances. But I understand what you're saying, and I'll look into that, because I think sometimes there may be more than one tax type audit being audited, or sometimes there's a supervisor involved. But I'll look at that in terms of and get back to you about any areas we've looked at to see if we can make that not quite seem so much of a burden.
Right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, to what extent is it a common practice versus is it more of a rarity?
Representative Downey. Before we go to Representative Downey, you'll have the floor here, but to respect your time, Commissioner, you have another commitment at 11:30, so we'll cut off then. And then, members, if you could, please, we'll go as far as we can to 11:30. We'll honor the commissioner's schedule. Go through what the department's been doing as far as some tax reform issues, and we may visit those later, but we don't necessarily have another meeting scheduled. But please, the commissioner's put a lot of work in, and his staff's put a lot of work in traveling the state, and so I think you'll find it interesting. We'll go as far as we can, but then please, members, continue to read the rest of what the commissioner's provided us with. Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll pass. I'd be glad to hear the rest of the commissioner's presentation too. And I just wanted to make a quick statement. Then my recollection of some of what happened on the floor and the intentions of what we were doing are a little different from Representative Lencheski's. And we don't need to go down that rabbit hole here today and have another 20 minutes of discussion, but maybe another time. So I just wanted folks to understand my impression was not that we carved out a certain category of people. It was that we actually carved out a specific technique used by the analytics vendors. And if I'm wrong, I would love to stand corrected and understand better. But
thank you, Representative Downey. Commissioner, if you could please go through your tax reform slides with us, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What I'd like to do on the tax reform overview is provide you kind of an update on what we've been doing, where we've been, and give you some, I did kind of an edited version here because I didn't think we'd get through it all. I'm happy to talk about any or come to any of your particular locations to make this presentation to business people or town halls. But what I wanted to do first of all was give you an overview of what we've been doing, kind of our time schedule and how we can work together going forward. As you know, we've been spending some time listening and trying to gather input from people around the state, Minnesotans around the state, from legislators and local officials, business and development groups, professionals and experts. And our goal is to present and prepare a proposal to this body next year, to the tax committee next year, and that's what we're working toward. Here's sort of where we've been thus far. We've been to 14 different cities. We've had over 27 meetings. We've had 16 legislators. I see Representative Garofalo has left, but that's his handsome face there with me. We've talked to over 1,400 people, and we established one advisory group. So let me go through a little bit and explain what this means. Obviously the cities are around the state. We're trying to increase that as much as we can. We're open to any invitation. I'll speak virtually anywhere about tax reform. I will give you one sign that in Alexandria, I was speaking before the Minnesota Township Association last November, and I, of course, think tax reform is the most important thing we can talk about, right? And But I had to follow a fellow who was talking about beaver dams and how to control beaver dams. And it made me realize that everything has to be put in perspective, that there are all sorts of issues out there, and beaver dams are important, and so is tax reform. But we're always welcome invitations to go anywhere. We've had, like I said, over 27 meetings with different groups. And the tax reform topics that we've engaged thus far, our goal is to give people information about what's going on in our economy with our tax system, and then to listen to them. What we want to do is we want to hear what they have to say, because one of the things that we're talking a lot about are changing demographics. Our economy is changing in terms of e-commerce and in terms of the service economy versus a manufacturing economy. We have a shifting mix of taxes now that I'll explain in just a minute with my props that I brought along. I want to show you my three-legged stools. We have some information about who pays the taxes. And then there's a lot of information about complexity, talking about tax expenditures. We want people to engage in this debate and find out if they really want to do something about tax expenditures or change those. And we talk about tax reform values. And I know one of the things that the chair and I have talked about on a number of occasions are those values about fairness and simplicity and developing economic prosperity for the state. And some of those terms are fairly vague. And what we really want to hear people and citizens tell us, what does it mean to them? What does fairness mean to them in terms of whether it's treating equals as equals? And one of the areas we hear people talk about is the affiliate nexus. They would like to see us tax affiliate nexus in this state because the Main Street businesses around the state would like to be treated just the same, have the folks from outside the state be treated just the same. So we hear a lot of comments about that, and here are the list of the areas where we're going next. But what I wanted to do was bring up one of the slides, some of the trends that we talk about, because this one is so critical about what we talk about in this committee, and that is the effect of jobs on the revenue stream. This last economic recession, we've seen from 2004 to 2008, we've seen a dramatic increase, 4.7% increase in jobs, which was great. But then we saw a 5.7% decrease in the recession, which was not so great. Well, you know, we're working back. We've now had about a 2.3% return of those jobs. There are about 168,000 people in Minnesota without a job right now. And that is the governor's concern, that we address those folks. We try to do what we can do to help them. But the next slide, I think, is so interesting because we've all talked about this in this committee, and that's the response that revenue has to jobs. When we had a job increase of about 4.7%, our sales tax went up 5%. On the other side, though, when jobs went down 5.7% in the recession, we lost 9% of the sales tax revenue. If you look at income tax, it's obviously even more pronounced. The income tax revenue went up 23%, and it went down 17% during the recession. And we all know this, the corporate income tax is one of the most volatile of all. And it goes up 92% when jobs are being created, and it goes down 46% when jobs are not being created. And I know that when this committee dealt with the Budget Trend Study Committee report in 2009, I think it was, and this committee and other folks talked about the volatility of our tax revenue system. And you know, when you look around the country in 2008 and 2009, and you see what happened to all the state revenues, you understand that, you know, there's no state that's immune from a recession like the one that we had, with maybe an exception or two. So what happens, and I think one of the things we need to think about going forward, is given the volatility of these taxes in relation to the economic situation and jobs, how do we protect ourselves against another downturn? I mean, I think the Budget Trend Study Committee recommended a bigger rainy day fund, for one thing. I mean, one of the ways you protect against volatility is to establish more than just, we have, what, $350 million in a cash reserve and another $650 million almost in the budget reserve. Well, there are folks who think that we should have another billion or $2 billion in a rainy day reserve fund that would help us get through another economic downturn. So there, there are issues out here that we also need to talk about in terms of revenue streams for the state of Minnesota. I mentioned earlier the flip in the economy. We now have an economy where consumers spend 67% of their income, or the share of their income, on services, not goods. Well, we've seen this coming, but it's been a complete flip from 1950. Here's another issue that you folks have been talking about with the e-commerce and the affiliate nexus. But if you look at the broader piece of e-commerce, you see that in 2011, the state of Minnesota lost probably $149 million in lost sales tax revenue to out-of-state sellers. Now, these out-of-state sellers, under the law, don't have to collect the sales tax and turn it over to Minnesota if they don't have any physical presence in Minnesota, according to the 1992 Quill case. Well, you know, part of the concern that that we have to deal with is this is increasing dramatically every year. Of that, about $4 or $5 million relates to the affiliate nexus question. We can redefine physical presence through the affiliate nexus law to include those folks who have people who have an affiliate relationship who are in the state and who are selling. So in essence, the affiliate nexus provides a new physical presence test, but that's only a small piece of the $149 million. There's a bill in Congress, the Marketplace Fairness Act, and that bill is looking to see if there's something that can be done on a national level so that all states could collect taxes from out-of-state sellers that are selling into the state. We lose about $55 million a year in catalog sales, and about $190 million we lose for businesses buying from remote sellers. So even businesses that buy from out-of-state sellers don't always pay the use tax because they're required to pay a use tax, even though they may not have to pay the sales tax. So you can see that when you add all that up, $400 million, that's a pretty sizable chunk of change that is just not being collected as a result of e-commerce. Another area that we talk about that is clearly on the horizon, and that is the aging population. In the next 28 years, we're going to see an additional 1.2 million people in the state of Minnesota, but of that, 850,000 will be over the age of 60. I'm happy to be in that group, but the problem, as we all know, is that with jobs, who are going to take over the new jobs? The complicated jobs that we have in Minnesota, we're all concerned about the workforce, and from a revenue standpoint, those folks 60 and above are paying less and less in the way of income tax because they're retiring or they're not making as much money. So there's a revenue impact on this as well. And maybe this is the last thing I could cover before we leave and have a few questions. And that's our balance of taxes. Let's see if the sound's hooked up. I'm not sure if it is.
That is so cool.
Now, how many commissioners show up with sound effects and a prop? Let me start here. And I would encourage and invite any of you, the representatives, to sign the footstools. We have a pretty impressive list of signatures on the back here. We put this together not because it signifies everything, but it lets people, especially in the town hall presentations, get a sense of, you know, we've traditionally relied on sales taxes, property taxes, and income taxes as the three legs of the revenue stool in comparison to one another in Minnesota. So in 1999, we had property taxes about 30.4%, sales taxes about 34.7%, and income taxes about 34.8%. Actually fairly well balanced, and it actually stands up. I have to be careful. But if you fast forward to 2010, well, things have changed. We all know this. I mean, this is something we all know and we're concerned about, and that is what's happened to the mix of these taxes relative to one another. And you'll see that the income tax is about the same. It's about 33.6%. That sort of makes sense. We haven't really changed anything or done anything in the last 10 years. There were some tax reductions, actually, in 1999 and 2000. The sales tax is 26.6%. A real erosion of that as a source of revenue when it comes to looking at it in relation to the other three legs. And as we're all not surprised, the property tax is 39.8%. So, you know, as we all know, that actually doesn't stand up. You know, the concern is as we go forward and we work together, on trying to figure out ways and avenues to solve problems, you know, in terms of making the system more fair and more simple. And part of the issue is, can we get a rebalance? Is there some ways, because, you know, we're all hearing about this concern about the out of balance legs. In fact, you know, this committee's been hearing concerns about the property taxes over and over again. So we really do, we get a lot of questions, a lot of comments about the balancing of the three legs of the stool. Let me just end on complexity. In 1987, we had about 9 adjustments and credits to the M1 or the individual income tax return. Oops. And now we have, we have about 50. In 1986, and this is the model that we're really using, we're utilizing the model that President Reagan utilized in 1986, and that was to, let's work with, he had a Republican Senate, a Democratic House, and then, of course, a Republican president. And they worked together to come up with the 1986 Tax Reform Act. And, in fact, the changes in 1987 in Minnesota reflect those changes and the simplifications on the individual income tax return. But the idea there was to broaden the base as much as we could by eliminating deductions and special credits and lowering the rates wherever possible and generating revenue that everyone agreed needed to be generated. So this gets a lot of folks concerned, and also the number of property tax classes and tiers is something that we're all concerned about and continues to expand and something we're concerned about. This is one of my favorite slides, and this is something that this is an actual flow chart that county assessors use to analyze whether a piece of property qualifies for an agricultural homestead. And it's actually gotten more complicated. This is a couple years old, so it's not even fully operational, so to speak. So people sort of shake their heads when they see this. But the last item that I want to hit is the tax expenditures. As you know, we bring in around $16 billion a year to the department. We don't collect, or we give away, or we don't have deductions for $11 billion. Another way to look at that is, for every dollar that we can tax, 40 cents of it's already been spoken for before we get around to deciding whether we should tax it. So the real question is, should we do this with an appropriation, or should it be in our tax code? And as you all heard the report last year by the Tax Expenditure Review Committee making recommendations to sunset some of these deductions, to at least talk about them, are they accomplishing their original purpose? And finally, something that I really want to encourage all of the members, and that is to talk with me and my staff to work about getting together, coming out to your community, so we can get people engaged and you can hear along with me what people are saying about what's fair, what it really is, what kind of simplicity do they really want, what makes a difference to them, and how can we do it in a way that promotes growth so that our high tax rate isn't a detriment to business in Minnesota, but the effective rate or the real rate actually is lower and something that people can really see. I think we do suffer from comparison with other states sometimes because of our higher rates that really are not the effective rate, but they are the statutory rate. And finally, we all have our favorite studies we like to show about whether Minnesota is competitive or not based on comparison with other states, and it's really hard to compare with other states. And I think that sometimes with our high rates, we don't rank very well. On the other hand, the Ernst & Young study rated us in the top 10. If you look at effective tax rates, what does it really cost to engage in building a new R&D or a new headquarters? And if you really look at the effective rate with all the capital equipment exemptions that we have, the R&D tax credit, or the single sales apportionment factor, we really come out okay, but not everyone looks that far. And so that is, it is something that we're not really marketing ourselves as well as we should as a state. And I've talked about this with the chair, and I think it's important that we all realize that if we're going to have tax reform, we all have to work together. We have to have a committed governor to tax reform, and we do. We have to have legislative champions, you folks. We have to work on this together. We have to come up with ideas that make sense. We don't want to come up with a report that we set over on the table and it collects dust. That's just not in anyone's best interest. We've got to have people out in the communities who are organizing, who are helping us. And obviously you, this is for the town hall people. You know, we want citizens to participate and be involved. And I've been so happy and amazed at the the depth of policy knowledge out there and with citizens, when they show up, they know what's going on, and they've got some real definite ideas. And I think it's really important for all of us together to listen to them as we go forward. So I got through the slides as best I could, Chair, but I'd like to have a few more questions before I take off, if that's okay.
Is that okay with you?
Yeah, yeah.
We want to honor your time, could hold questions and contact you individually, or if there's any brief questions. Maybe what we should do is if any members have questions for the commissioner, you might want to just give them a call and ask. In closing here, Dr. Wilson, tomorrow, tax expenditures. Members, bring your tax expenditure reports. There won't be new ones there tomorrow, so if you could bring those with. And, Commissioner, I just want to thank you for traveling the state and having these meetings. I was able to join you for a couple of these meetings, and we get some pretty good questions, and you handle them very well, and I really appreciate it. I think it's great that you're out across the state of Minnesota, listening to the citizens. So with that, thank you for your presentation. If you have questions, please follow up with the commissioner. We'll see you tomorrow. And with that, good government all the time. We are adjourned.